Well, good morning. I hope you're enjoying this weather. I certainly am, especially since the rain washed some of the pollen away. I can breathe a little bit better, but beautiful day, a wonderful day to come together to worship God. We're delighted that you're here. We welcome our visitors, and we invite you to come back and be with us every opportunity that you have. Don't want to embarrass her, but we're delighted to see Christy Gray. This is Eric's sister-in-law that we've been praying about for quite some time that's able to be here with us today. So please be sure to meet Christy. And Christy, we are delighted that you're here. I want to add someone to our prayer list. Many of you know JT and Rebecca Harrison. Rebecca is in the hospital, I believe at Mobile Infirmary. With some abdominal trouble. She's having a difficult time, so please remember Rebecca Harrison in your prayers. Virgime, I like to say Ravier. I think that's what she has told me is the correct pronunciation. It just sounds good to me. But Virgime Ravier, Lord willing, and I believe it's on Saturday, will celebrate her 99th birthday. And I would love for her church family to flood her mailbox with birthday wishes this week. So let's do that and wish Miss Virgin May a very, very happy birthday. At the Welcome Center, there is a stack of house-to-house, heart-to-heart publications. And with the help of the Jacksonville Church that Alan Webster's the editor and he's the preacher for that congregation, all households in the 36695 zip code will receive house-to-house, heart-to-heart for, I think, four publications, which should span over the course of the year. That publication at the Welcome Center is the one that should be arriving any day now. I live in the zip code, and I haven't received mine yet, as many of you have not. But I want you to be aware of that, be prayerful of that. It's an outreach tool, and our hope and prayer is that those who receive it will read it, will call us, send for free Bible study material, and hopefully this will be a door opener for many to receive the good news of Jesus. So be prayerful about that outreach effort, and watch for it if you live in that zip code, but I'm excited about the possibilities. For 51 years, Bob Edens was blind. His world was a black hall of sounds and smells, and he felt his way through life for 5 decades until finally a surgeon performed a complicated surgery, after which he gained his sight. I want to share with you some words from Bob Edens. I never would have dreamed that yellow is so yellow. I don't have the words. I'm amazed by yellow, but red is my favorite color. I can't believe red. I can see the shape of the moon, and I like nothing better than seeing a jet plane flying across the sky, leaving a vapor trail. And of course, sunrises and sunsets. And at night, I look at the stars in the sky and the flashing light. You could never know how wonderful everything is. Imagine never being able to see. Imagine being born that way. How do you describe colors? How do you perceive colors when you can't see them? Imagine what it would be like never to see a sunrise nor a sunset. What it would be like to never see the faces of those that you love. Jesus encountered a man who had been born blind, who never could have imagined what red and yellow the colors are, who never saw a sunrise nor a sunset. And we'll read about him in John chapter 9, and I want to ask you to turn your Bibles there to John chapter 9. But the beautiful and amazing thing about this chapter is that we'll see in the end that it's really the blind man who had the greatest vision. The former blind man, that is. But near the end of the chapter in which Brother Troy read for us, the Pharisees ask a question. What? Are we blind too? You see, the man who was born blind was not the blind man, in fact. The real blindness that we will encounter in this story comes on the part of virtually everyone else, all the other characters in this historical occasion. You see, it's possible to have your sight, physical eyesight, and yet still be blind. I want to pose that question to each of us. Are we blind too? As we read through and study John chapter 9, I'd like to point out four things that can cause us to be spiritually blind. Number one, we can see in the disciples. And they were blinded by judgment. And notice with me in verse 1 of John 9. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciple asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Before we go any further, we need to understand that this was a common misconception. That a person's physical well-being often reflected his state in the sight of God, his sinfulness. Even the disciples hint at this, that this man's blindness and his sin must be connected. Who sinned? Was it this man or his parents that he was born blind? And that's such a sad misunderstanding. You remember Job's friends had the same understanding, didn't they? When they came to him and sat with him and mourned with him, it seemed like they were doing everything that would have been helpful to him until they started speaking. And when they started speaking, when Job was saying, "Why has all this happened to me?" Basically, they're saying, "Job, you must have done something horrible for you to be suffering like this." But Job maintained his innocence. "I've done nothing to incur this punishment from God." You see, Job's friends misunderstood. There are some Bible translators, Bob and Jan Smotherman, that worked with the Makuna people in Colombia, South America. And so they had this task of translating the Bible into the language of this Makuna people. They worked 5 years on the Gospel of John and finally felt like they had a good translation to communicate that gospel to the people there. On one occasion, they began reading in a public assembly from John chapter 9, this very chapter. And the scripture was read that Jesus said to this man that was born blind, that he was born blind in order that the work of God may be put on display. At that statement, the old chief of this people stood to his feet and motioned for everyone to be silent. And he made this statement, "We must stop killing our babies. We must stop killing our babies." What was that about? This people was steeped in animism. And the normal process was to take their deformed babies, if their babies were born deformed or blind, that they would take these babies to a desolate place because of their beliefs. And there the babies would be deserted and exposed until they died. You see, they associated their deformities with something that wasn't pleasing to their gods. It was a gross misunderstanding. But look at what Jesus says. "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." And we'll see the work of God in this chapter. And it just reminds us of other works of God that he's able to do in our lives. But I want you to notice here that the disciples saw in this blind man an opportunity to discuss, to have a theological debate. But when Jesus saw him, he saw someone in whom the work of God could be made manifest. And folks, it's a lot easier to sit back and debate the theological ramifications of someone's bad decisions than it is to see how we could help someone who's made some bad decisions. It's so much easier to point out problems in other people and debate that than it is to be willing to get involved in their lives and try to help in other ways. You see, it's easier to judge than it is to help. The disciples ask, who sinned, this man or his parents? Now, I wonder if they said that right in the presence of that man, in earshot of him. Who messed up here? Did he commit some terrible sin? And some even thought in that day and time that you could sin even prenatally in the womb. Was it some sin that he committed before he's even born into the world? Or is it the sin of his parents? Never mind that he's in need of help. Never mind that he spent his life in a dark cave. The question almost seems harsh, insensitive. How could they be so blind? But it's easier to talk about a person than it is to help a person. Notice this statement, it's easier to label than to love. Got a can here. I'm willing to share with you. No, it doesn't have a label on it. And when I called Haley this morning and asked her to get a can out of our pantry and take the label off, I'm sure she thought, okay, Dad's lost it again. It reminds me of the time that I accompanied Ricky Butts and our youth group several years ago to Raven County, Georgia, where we did a vacation Bible school with the church there in Raven County. And one night, we'd assembled a bunch of cans and a box full of cans, and we were going to have what I think Ricky called it mystery stew. And basically what it was you opened up a can and just dumped it in the pot, and it simmered all day long. Some cans didn't have labels on them. So that's okay. Open it up and dump it in. Doesn't matter what it is. It was good, by the way. What's inside of this can? You can render a guess, but you cannot know until you open the can or read what Patrice wrote on the top of it. There's something wrong with applying a label before examining the contents. And that's never more true than it is with people. We may see something. We may see some characteristics about a person and think, well, that must be a... And we wrap that label around them. We cannot make that judgment unless we know the contents. Jesus had another way of viewing this man. Other than a theological debate, he saw an opportunity for God. Why was he born blind? Jesus says that the works of God should be revealed in him. And if we would adopt that same mindset, now I know he's talking about a miracle here, and we can't go there. But we can learn this lesson of, instead of labeling others, let's love them, despite the label that may be attached. And let's do our best to help the work of God be done in their lives. That means we need to see people and not labels. Jesus demonstrated the glory of God. Verse 6, when he had said these things, he spat on the ground, made clay with the saliva. He anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. He said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. There's the work of God. It was a miracle. This blind man who had never seen yellow, never seen a sunrise, now could see it all. And no doubt was amazed, just like Bob Edens. when that surgery restored his sight. But then we're introduced to another group of people that were also blind. They were blinded by familiarity. And that's the neighbors. Apparently, presumably, these people grew up near this man's home. They'd known him most likely for years. Yet this man comes back seeing, and then they began to question among themselves. John 9, verse 8. The neighbor said, who had previously had seen him that was born blind, said, Is this not he who sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. The man said, I am he. Isn't that interesting that they began to debate about, is this really him? Isn't it interesting that it doesn't use a name? They just refer to him as he who begged. They said to him, verse 10, how were your eyes opened? He answered and said, a man called Jesus. If you're in the habit of underlining your Bible, underline that statement. A man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and I received sight. At first they were unwilling to believe that something dramatic had taken place. And so they debated, is this really him or what has happened here? Yet the man reassured him, I am he. I'm the one. I'm the one who was dependent upon you and others to survive because I was blind and needed help. What had happened? This is what I suggest. That they had become emotionally distant from this man. They'd seen him begging so much that it got to where he just kind of faded into the background. And over time, they just didn't see him anymore. They had become blind to him. And folks, that can happen to you and to me. We get so wrapped up in our lives and the things that we need to do. The things that are on our to-do list. So many times we pass by people who may have needs that we can help address. And they may be reoccurring needs. And they may be people that we've just seen all the time. But yet because we're so focused on what we need to do, that we become blind to them. One person said it like this. Our self-absorption and unwillingness to empathize with those who are not like us deprives us of experiencing the depth of God's caring and concern for His people. In other words, our self-absorption causes us to be blinded to people that God may want us to help. And you see, these neighbors, because of their blindness, miss the greatest opportunity to recognize the Son of God. And to recognize the life that Jesus wanted to give them. You see, if they had seen this man as more than a nameless beggar, they would have seen the newly found joy on his face. They might have understood that it was the power of Jesus that had healed this man. They might have gotten to know Jesus, recognize him as the Son of God, and submit their lives to him for salvation. They could have been with the man when he heard Jesus identify himself as the Messiah, the Son of Man. You see, their self-absorption was a type of blindness that denied them the opportunity to have life as only God can give. Are we blind too? Then we encounter another group. The neighbors brought him who was formerly blind to the Pharisees. They're debating with one another about, is this the man that we've seen in the past? Could it be that he was healed from his blindness? How did this happen? And so they go to the Pharisees, and it seems that the Pharisees will know. But you see, the Pharisees were blinded by their religion. You see, John 9, verse 14 points out a problem to the Pharisees. It was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. It was the Sabbath day. The law of Moses says, do no work on the Sabbath. And so the Pharisees said, well, that's not good enough. Let's define work. And so they made a long, long list of things that you could not do on the Sabbath day because that would be violating the commandment. And Jesus had reportedly healed this man on the Sabbath. That was a violation of the commandment of God. Verse 15, the Pharisees asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. They said to the blind man again, what do you say about him, because he opened your eyes? And I want to ask you to underscore this statement too. He said he is a prophet. There was a man called Jesus that made clay and anointed my eyes. Who is he? He is a prophet. But the Jews didn't believe initially concerning him, that he'd been born blind and received his sight. So they debated, was he in fact blind at all? And they debated, Jesus must be a sinner because he healed on the Sabbath. And isn't that awful? Here was a man who had the work of God had been in his life. He had been blind, had never seen. And now Jesus had healed him and he could see all the colors vividly. And the Pharisees are upset because Jesus did it on the Sabbath. They were so in tune, so focused on their laws and regulations that they had stapled to the pages of God's Word that they had missed God. And Jesus rebuked them time and time again for that very thing. On another occasion, Matthew 15, verse 3, Jesus said to the scribes and Pharisees, why do you transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? Verse 6, you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition, hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. In their desire and in their zeal to do what they believed to be God's will, they missed God. And they missed this manifestation of the glory of God. They were blind because of their religion. Let's don't be blinded by what we perceive to be the will of God, the law of God, by maintaining things that aren't in line with his actual will. They can cause us to be blind to what God is doing. Then there's one other group I want us to see. And that's the man's parents. The parents of this man who had been born blind. The parents who had taken care of him as a child. The parents who did everything for him as he was growing up, that knew him. And verse 18 says, the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been born blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. They didn't believe until they called the parents in. Watch their discussion. They asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he see? His parents answered and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself. Now look at verse 22. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he, that Jesus, was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. He'd be excommunicated. So here are his parents. Yes, we can vouch for this. That's our son. That's our son. But they'd only go with him so far. As to how he now is able to see, and as to who did it, we cannot say. Ask him. He is of age. But I want you to see that in this blind, formerly blind man, there is a faith that is emerging. But his parents weren't willing to stand with him in that aspect of his life. They were afraid. Because if they said it was Jesus who did it, and that if they began to reach the same conclusions that their son is concluding, then they'd be thrown out of the synagogue. Big deal, you may say. It was a big deal for them. They would lose their friends. They would lose their standing in the community. They would suffer economically. Other Jews, fellow Jews, were to have nothing to do with them. And they didn't want to go there. They were blind by their fear. You and I can have the same kind of blindness. When it comes time for you and me to take a stand for Jesus, and yet we refuse to out of fear, we're blinded by our fear. One person said, a courageous expression of love for people and for God will often contradict the selfishness of the world and result in threats and rejection for us. And some are just not willing to go there. Some say, I believe, but they'll only go so far. And if the pressure is mounting, if it causes us to be put in uncomfortable situations when we have to take a stand for our faith, many are not willing to go there. Fear is such a crippling agent, and it keeps us from doing the will of God. The Pharisees continued to debate the former blind man. And the blind man begins to gain more and more boldness. And whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, though I was blind, now I see. That inspired the words of the song that we know and love. And they kept saying, he could not have done this to you. He answered, I told you how it happened. You did not listen. What do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples? Now he's really standing toe to toe with them. And they just dismiss him. They put him out of their presence. And some suggest that this meant that they excommunicated him. They kicked him out of the synagogue to experience those very things that his parents were afraid of. Underscore verse 33. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. You see his faith emerging, growing. So finally in verse 35. Let me begin in verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of God? He said to him, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? Remember, he was blind when Jesus anointed his eyes. He had no clue as to who it was. Didn't know what he looked like. Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking to you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. Underscore that one. Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Then Jesus makes application. He says, for judgment I have come into this world that those who do not see may see, and those who see may be blind, may be made blind. Some of the Pharisees who were with him heard him say these words and said to him, are we blind also? That's exactly who Jesus was speaking to. He said, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. They thought they saw. They thought they had it all figured out. Jesus says, you think you see, but you're the ones that are blind. But let me ask us this question again. Are we blind too? Have we been blinded by our prejudgment of others? Are we blinded by familiarity? Are we blinded by religion, false religion? Are we blinded by fear? We can learn a lot from this formerly blind man. His faith grew and grew and grew until finally, when Jesus presented himself, he says, Lord, I believe. You see, this formerly blind man is the one who could see most clearly. I like to describe his as double vision, because he gained his physical sight, but he also gained his spiritual eyesight in recognizing that Jesus is the Son of God. How's your vision this morning? Have you been blinded? Do you need to come to Christ to have your vision restored? If you need to obey the gospel this morning, if you need the prayers of the church, we hope and pray that you'll come right now as we stand and sing.